This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 15, Aragog.
Aragog.
Oh boy, it's about time. So I'm like, my immediate thought when I'm answering, or because this is where we're finally going to meet giant spider Aragog.
Yeah, not Aragorn.
Not Aragorn, not oregano.
Oregano.
Not Aragon.
Yes. Just,
there
yes.
are so many things. And then who's the spider in Lord of the Rings?
Oh, it's, yeah, I know. Yeah, I can never.
Shelob or something?
Shelob?
Shelob. Yeah, people are like, oh my gosh, you guys. Ugh. Yeah, Shelob. There's so many. So on that note, do you think it is possible to have guessed giant spider by this point?
Oh, so the question is, has there been enough context to lead us to believe
right
that this could be out there?
Right. Could you have, I mean, I think there's enough like, weird spider behavior and like large hairy things scuttled past Tom Riddle in the diary.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's kind of one of those where it feels like, it does feel like there's a scene where we see like spiders sort of like all scurrying in a line away from like one of the attacks, right?
Yeah.
So we know that there's that. But this is like one of those where it's like there's a lot of weird behavior happening, and that's kind of like what Chamber of Secrets is all about. It's just like red herrings everywhere. So it's hard to say. I don't know. I don't think so, but do you?
I don't know. I think you could have guessed that the creature Hagrid had was a spider. I don't think you'd have guessed that it's like bigger than a car.
No, definitely not.
Like,
definitely not.
I suppose that could be one of those things where it's like, if you've read enough other fantasy things, like maybe giant spider is just like, oh yeah, well, at some point in the series, there will be giant spider.
Right, right. Like that seems like enough of like a trope, like
right.
that it wouldn't be completely unreasonable, especially for one to have like, you know, human level intelligence.
Which this, yeah, that's the crazy part. Yeah, you can like talk English and stuff.
I know. Yeah, it's very interesting that like the other thing about Aragog is that like it even, you know, it sort of like alludes to the basilisk and its existence and how like Acromantula in general sort of like fear this particular thing. Like we do not speak its name. It's like we don't talk about it. But it's also like Aragog has exclusively lived in sort of like a removed environment from, you know, what his home habitat might actually be.
That's true.
To the point where it's hard to know how Aragog ever could have learned the kind of information that like instinctually it may know, like, I don't want to be near this thing.
It feels like the basilisk, yeah, like the spiders all sort of instinctually know like what it is and like fear it. Like they can sense its presence in some sort of like ethereal way.
Yes. Yeah. It seems to be like in the air in the same, and there is like this trifecta going on where there's the rooster, the spiders, and the basilisk.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a game of like rock, paper, scissors a little bit.
Right.
You know, where it seems like each one sort of has like a little bit of power over the other in a really strange and unusual way. But the other thing that's kind of interesting about it is that, like, Hagrid's advice to follow the spiders, because that's pretty much what we just left the last chapter, chapter 14, with, is Hagrid, you know, they're inside of Hagrid's hut. Ron and Harry are underneath the invisibility cloak. Fudge appears with Malfoy and Dumbledore.
Right.
And he sort of, like, leaves with this cryptic advice of, like, you know, if anybody wanted to learn some stuff, they should follow the spiders.
Oh, the spiders.
And that's, like, an interesting one, because it's like, is Hagrid, being a lover of Fantastic Beasts, does he know, like, he can't possibly know it's a basilisk.
That, he does not know, because Aragog says Hagrid has asked him many times and he has never told him.
Exactly. So, yeah. Like, is Hagrid's advice more like, if you want to find out, like, what happened in my situation, I would follow the spiders?
I think that's what he's saying.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because, like, in the meantime, though, it's not very good. It's simultaneously good advice and not good advice, because Hagrid, seeing the good in all creatures, doesn't believe that Aragog will cause damage to Harry or Ron if he were to go into their glade.
Yeah.
Hagrid's wrong.
Hagrid's wrong.
You know, and it is dangerous, and it's like poor advice. But we also learn more about what happens, or Harry ultimately learns more, although probably only in, like, a cryptic capacity. Like, Aragog doesn't intentionally tell him anything. You know, even at the end of the chapter, Harry's like lying in bed being like, well, I don't know, like, what comes next.
He really learns is that Hagrid's innocent.
Yes. Yeah. But this is sort of, like, an interesting one as well before we get into the chapter, because I think it's a theory around Aragog in particular that I have a very love-hate relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And that theory is that, like, when we learn that Aragog came to Hagrid, it's basically under the premise of, like, in the pocket of a traveler.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, when Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them came out and people started to learn more about the character of, like, Newt Scamander, it was like the pocket of a traveler was Newt.
Right.
And Newt was the one who gave, you know, Aragog to Hagrid.
Yeah.
And the reason I have such a love-hate relationship with it is because it's like, on the one hand, it's kind of like, it seems unlike Newt to think of beasts so much. Like, while he keeps them in his case, it seems like he keeps them all for very, like, specific purposes.
Yeah.
And it would seem odd for him to, like, hand them over as, like, a pet.
It does seem odd, especially because it feels like, even if Hagrid doesn't know better, like, Newt would maybe know better a little bit.
But the thing about that is, and that was the exact sentiment I wanted you to express, because it's like, Newt also, from, like, Leto Lestrange, has that sentiment of, like, you've never met a beast you couldn't love.
And yeah.
In that moment, Leta is referring kind of to herself.
Kind of to herself,
like,
yeah.
You know, but, like, I think it also stands true for Newt. Like, it is one of those things, like, where Newt can see the good in everything, especially beasts that might otherwise be quite dangerous. And, like,
yeah,
we've had some theories about, like, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them before, where, like, Newt's whole thing is that, like, he will write about beasts only in a capacity that is beneficial to the beasts.
Yeah.
Like, the sentiment of, like, Where to Find Them is almost like, hey, are you a bird watcher and do you want to go into the woods and find cool things to look at? Like, it's almost like Newt is only going to inform the populace about what they need to know that will protect the species that are out there.
And right. Then
our big argument forever has been, like, the Zowu, like, in Crimes of Grindelwald,
yeah,
is very prominent in the film and also very not featured in...
Not featured at all.
In the book.
Yeah.
As well as the, what's the tiny baby deer thing? The Chillin.
Oh, the Chillin, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's huge in the movie, and Newt personally handles one and encounters three of them in the
yes.
movie,
yeah.
And, like, knows obviously where to go to find them to look for it.
Right.
And it's not in there, despite it being, like, kind of a widely well-known animal. And, like, it's like, why isn't it in there? It's because Newt doesn't want to tell you where to find them. He doesn't even want you to know about them. He right. wants them to remain peacefully secluded away in China.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes, yeah. We're like, in their natural habitat. And so it's like, he doesn't inform you because you don't need to know, because you shouldn't find them. And he doesn't even want to tell you what their powers are, because their powers will be taken advantage of, and he doesn't want that.
Right.
So it's like, you know, so it's like our headcanon explanation is just like, so just exclude it entirely. So anyway, like, when it comes back to, like Aragog, though, that's where it's like there's a piece of me that like Hagrid has this same belief. He would send Harry and Ron into the forest because he doesn't believe that there's a beast that would cause harm to humans.
Right.
And so like Hagrid is very similar to Newt in this capacity. He's seeing the best in them.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they are also still dangerous.
I mean, they're very dangerous. And it's like, yeah, why would he give it to them? It's like, this feels like a question that would have been answered had we gotten the final Fantastic Beasts movies.
True,
like,
true.
You know, like I can see, yeah, Grindelwald has the Acromantula eggs and he wants to, you know, do whatever. He wants an army of giant spiders and Newt steals the egg. And then he's like, well, he knows I have it, so I got to pass it off and I'll just put it at Hogwarts and now you'll take care of it. Great. Or something, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, yeah, if Newt could see more of himself in anybody else, it would have to be.
Has to be Hagrid.
Has to be Hagrid.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're such mirrors of one another. It's wild. Like,
yeah.
Even, I mean, it's one of those things like where when you see the fact that Dumbledore is so closely aligned with both Hagrid and Newt at different stages of his life, it's almost like Dumbledore is using this as like a litmus test a little bit to be like, you know, how can I trust somebody?
Right.
And it's like, if they have like an affinity for beasts, then it's almost like that's like a good green flag.
Right.
For Dumbledore.
Definitely seems like it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's one of those where I go back and forth all the time. Even the idea that if it was Newt in particular who gave the spider to Hagrid in the first place offers even more credence, pun intended, since he's also a vital character of the Fantastic Beasts saga, to the idea that Dumbledore would then go out to protect Hagrid in the aftermath.
Because then it's like Dumbledore should almost like know or something, or be like, well, I have a feeling I know what. Well, I guess it doesn't matter because I think Aragog's the one that did it. So him right. knowing that, like, oh, Hagrid had a beast ahead of time is almost incriminating to himself. Then
it is incriminating to himself. It's also, I mean, all of this is taking place in 1942, which is 3 years before the ultimate downfall of Grindelwald.
Yeah,
and so it's it. I mean,
oh, it, I like yeah. the idea that Grindelwald was going to use Aragog.
It
as
does
like a,
yeah.
as like a. A weapon.
Right, right. Yeah. Even that would be then kind of poetic if then, like, the Chamber of Secrets is Tom Riddle, who also has that, like, pure blood mania, and Aragog the spider, who is supposed to be a pawn in Grindelwald's rise to power in a similar capacity, is ultimately the mild undoing of one of Tom yeah. Riddle's own efforts.
Like, right.
You know, you can sort of see how the ping pong ball is bouncing back and forth a little bit between those yeah. two ideologies. Like,
a little tether between these two dark wizards.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very
so
fun.
Anyway, that being said, we can dive on into the chapter. I didn't know where I'd be able to talk about that in chapter. So I was like, well, let's lead with it.
Yes.
But so chapter 15, Aragog.
Yeah. So what do you think of the chapter art here? It's mostly just like sort of a weird spider dome in the woods.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't give you a whole lot to work with. You can see like a tiny little spider there. This is again probably one of those instances where there was worry that the chapter art could give too much away.
A little too spoilery.
Because you could just have a gigantic spider. I could also see a world where like, and I have no idea if this would stand true for other chapter arts. Literally the next chapter is Chamber of Secrets, where the chapter art is a giant snake skin. So maybe the point I'm about to make is invalid, but I could see a world where just general fear of spiders in general might lead people to be like a little...
Oh, like don't put giant spiders on your books.
Don't put giant spiders on their books because people don't like giant spiders.
You know, you're right. I'm trying to think of like other Chamber of Secrets, like cover arts, and I don't think many of them feature Aragog.
Even
a lot of flying cars. This one's got, it heavily features Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Dobby and Malfoy. You can see the diary, you can see a spider, and you can see weaving snake skin.
Right.
You can see Tom Riddle down there. What do you know?
You can, yeah, no. It's,
yeah.
There's a lot going on in this chapter art, but not chapter art, cover art. So anyway, I like the Chamber of Secrets film depiction of Aragog's glade. I thought that
scene,
I mean, it's pretty uncomfortable, especially if you don't like spiders, but like it, I mean, they went for like a puppetized animatronic version
yeah.
of Aragog. Like they clearly put a lot of resources into creating those visuals. And in general, I always think practical effects are better than, you know, CGI.
Yeah.
So it's like, I really like how it's all depicted, and it does seem like it's a lot of spiders.
It's a lot of spiders. Yeah.
Yeah. What we're seeing here seems like one big spider web.
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
doesn't quite capture the essence.
Not so much. But then again, it's like, is it out of fear of being spoilery? So
yeah, yeah. So there's things that I'd say it's like a solid five. You know, it's right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
I'm fine with that.
All right. So anyway, let's actually talk about the chapter here. So Hagrid's been taken away. I love how in Harry's opinion that with no Hagrid visible from the castle window, striding the grounds with Fang at his heels, the scene didn't look right to Harry. I'm just like, yes, Hagrid is the very essence of summer, is he not? You know,
Yeah. Nothing says summer like
Hagrid in his giant oversized
coat,
which yeah. I assume he wears year round.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean,
his big old boots.
It feels moleskin, right?
Yeah.
It feels like moleskin is both somehow warming and breathable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could wear it for a triathlon if you felt like it.
Right. Probably.
Which Hagrid probably does.
Yeah. He's a big triathlon guy, huge swimmer, which I mean, he's just a large person who swims.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge swimmer.
Exactly. Yeah. A huge swimmer. No, it works out well. But yeah, so it definitely seems like we're narrowing in on the classic Harry Potter trope of it's the end of the school year and therefore the plot needs to reach
plot needs to happen.
Yeah. It's like, it would be so funny if one of these books was literally just like Christmas, Voldemort attacks, Harry wins, and then the rest of the year is just watching them have classes and play Quidditch.
I know. It's just like, and now who's going to win the Quidditch Cup?
Yay! Yeah. We just get to have fun.
Don't know. It's like Voldemort's not. I need like 9 months of messing with this kid before I do anything. Spring's a good time to attack, you know?
It is.
Spring and attack. Get it? Loves wordplay.
Yeah. Classic Voldemort.
Classic Voldemort.
Yeah. But that being said, it also seems like despite Hagrid's advice of following the spiders, it's a little bit hard to do because it seems like there are no spiders left in the castle to follow.
That's such a weird one because I mean, my note there was just like, well, it's about time. Like these spiders have apparently been fleeing the basilisk since what, like October?
Yeah.
Like, and now what is it? May or April? And it's like, it took them that long to all get out of the castle. Like, do they keep coming back? Do they think it's gone?
I wonder the same thing a little bit, or it's like, is this supposed to like represent like how close in proximity does the basilisk need to be in order for the spiders to go into like retreat mode?
Right.
You know, the other thing too, is that does it mean that all of the spiders, if they're all going like, you know, in air quotes home, that they all, like all spiders of all types live in Aragog's glade?
Oh, I know. Yeah. Is it like the Acromantulas are just like so top of the spider food chain that like all other spiders have been decimated and this is all that's left. All spiders are destined to be giant spiders at Hogwarts.
But that would be crazy.
It would be crazy because you know what? It feels like a lot of the spiders you'd see around the school would start to be a little bigger.
A little bit. The size of a Pekingese. A Pekingese, mind you.
Here. Okay, you know what else would have been like an interesting detail is if like throughout the year there was just like, you know, kind of like more bugs around Hogwarts because there were no spiders to eat them.
Oh, that would be hilarious. Yeah,
It's a lot of flies in the air all of a sudden. What's going on?
Right, like there's a little subplot going on where like the mandrakes are struggling because there's like an infestation of other pests that are not being eaten by spiders. Oh,
that would have been a great subplot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
something to keep in mind for the HBO show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
just like a 90s little detail that's like, we don't draw attention to it, but there are more flies.
There are more flies.
You know, there's a light buzzing, you know?
Although, I guess that being said, this is not related because the plan hasn't been enacted yet, but we do know that Hagrid runs into Harry at Nocturne Alley because he's buying flesh-eating slug repellent.
That's true.
So, like, there is a small pest-related homage.
True, but yeah, the chamber hasn't been opened at that point.
Oh, but you know, that's what would make it so much better is that it's already been established that there's a pest issue, so it might not seem like that big of a deal.
You're
like,
Harry right.
Can even have a line. It's like, well, Hagrid was buying the flesh-eating slug repellent.
Right. Yeah, why are there so many more pest problems?
Although maybe we're like way, way, way too in the weeds on the concept that spiders are occasionally beneficial because they eat other insects.
We are not in the weeds on that. This is the main pro-spider argument. If spiders don't have this, they have nothing.
They got nothing.
They're just creepy then. Oh my gosh, I watched this guy on Instagram. He does like weekly like home maintenance reminders and like shows you how to do cool things around your house. And he's
nice.
He was doing one about like spraying your house for
bugs. And he's like, now there is one bug that actually is beneficial to your house, and it's called the house centipede. It looks like this. It's a total nightmare. And I was like, I hate those things. They're in my house, and every time I see one, it's dead. I don't care what you say.
They're like the super multi-legged.
But like they eat other bugs and are like sort of beneficial to your house. And I'm like, not to me. Not beneficial to my nightmares, I'll tell you that. Sorry, I believe you, but also I'm not taking your advice.
It's hilarious that the dichotomy we have in this book between creepy creatures is ones that have too many legs and ones that don't have enough
ones
legs.
Ones that don't got enough legs.
Yeah. It's like we're really, that's like a sticking point for us as humans. It's like the amount of like legs or arms something has in either direction seems to be really impacting what our general sense is.
You got more than four legs, that's too many. More than four limbs,
Yeah, starting to...
Afraid not.
Starting to become a thing.
Starting to be weird.
So anyway, they're having a little bit of a hard time.
Yeah, more than two eyes. And we're really in, you know,
In uh-oh territory. Uh-oh. Yeah. How many eyes does Aragog have? Do you remember?
Eight?
Is it eight?
I think so.
We had this question on trivia before. I just read this chapter and I still already don't know.
I don't know. We're going to find out soon, I guess. We'll get to there soon. in our read through here. Also, I do like this. I didn't realize it, but like Harry, after Dumbledore leaves, it says, Harry constantly repeated Dumbledore's final words to himself. I will only have truly left the school when none here are loyal to me. Help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it. Like I think it's nice that there is like attention paid to like how much Harry is internalizing this and like constantly thinking about it, because it's like also one of those things that feels like it then sets Harry apart from like Ron in the coming chapters.
Well, and it's kind of like an interesting one as well, because I know that like when Dumbledore's talking to Harry in King's Cross Station at the end of the book, like after Harry's like, you know, halfway death there, you know, I think Dumbledore says a line like, I hope I was a good teacher, and Harry's like, you were the best. And it's like, well, he's only really been instructing you for like kind of a short period of time. In between those moments, you guys weren't having like tons of exchanges. But this is an instance where it's sort of like every word counts. Like,
right.
You know, it's like what Dumbledore is saying at all times is so important. It's so impactful.
Right.
And it's sticking, you know, with Harry in such a way. It's also nice that there's a double down on this particular phrase because of how vitally important it is in the next chapter once we enter the Chamber of Secrets itself.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Know? And then, you know what? It's interesting. It's like how much teaching did Dumbledore do? But then if you go back to the first book, Harry also thinks Dumbledore like basically wanted Harry to do the obstacle course.
Yes.
So in a sense, that's like Dumbledore teaching him as well.
That's true. It's very much like that sentiment of like, you know, I Dumbledore thought I deserved the chance to have a go at it if I wanted to.
Like Dumbledore seems to teach Harry about like non-traditional like non-spell based magic.
Oh, you're right, because
like even the mirror,
yeah. And then the Sword of Gryffindor in the woods when Harry goes in to get it, and then the locket sort of like turns on him while he's underwater, and then Ron is the one who gets it, and then like Ron, or afterwards Harry's like, I'm pretty sure it needs to be you. I'm not even pretty sure. He says, you're the one who needs to do it. And he's like, Harry wasn't sure why, but there was a certain kind of niss.
Or it was like Dumbledore had taught him enough about certain kinds of magic.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's an interesting one. Like all the like non-magic lesson, like actually magic, but not like the kind of magic you think of.
Right, right. Which I think is also kind of like it's fascinating like reflection if you were to like take it out into the real world, because any of us can be like experts on like our specific fields, our topics,
you know,
like areas that like we need to be good at.
Right.
And that's like one vital aspect. But then like when you zoom out, it's also like, how do you get along with others? How do you lead? How do you communicate?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many other things that are essential for success besides just knowledge in subject matter.
Well, this is then why Harry is the hero and not Hermione too.
That there's a point to that. But it's also, yeah. I mean, you can't forget how vital Hermione is.
You cannot oversell how important Hermione is.
Yeah.
She's so
essential.
Not in this book as much.
She's been petrified for a hot second, but she still figured it out.
She does still figure it out. And there's like a nice little just like one sentence like, oh yeah, we need to make sure they don't, Hermione figured it out a while ago, but now Madame Pomfrey's like, no, no one can come visit them. There's every chance the attacker might come back to finish these people off, which the sentence is actually saying, we can't let Harry and Ron find out about the piece of paper in Hermione's hand yet.
Like, if you don't include that line, then you inevitably end up with the problem of, why weren't Harry and Ron going to visit Hermione in the hospital wing?
Exactly.
And so it's like, you got to have that is like, reading the book in this capacity is teaching me so many things about like writing mm-hmm. where it's sort of like, people are going to ask this question. So you have to have a line somewhere innocuously buried that just sort of like clears it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there it is. Yeah. We addressed it.
There's every chance they'll come back. It's like, there's no chance he's coming back. What do you mean? Mrs. Norris has been petrified since October, and tons of people have been attacked since then. No one's come back to finish anyone off.
Right. This is not like an all of a sudden problem, but it is. I mean, we talked about this last chapter as well, but it's like the attack on Hermione is the one that finally like does it in. It's almost like the school is like, all right, we got to pay attention to this now.
Yeah.
You know, Hermione went down.
Ugh.
And Penelope Clearwater, but mostly Hermione.
Yeah, that prefect girl.
Yeah, she's got big main character energy.
Oh, yeah, you know, I know, man. All right, so let's see. 2 weeks after Dumbledore is taken, Harry overhears Draco bragging. He says, I told you he thinks Dumbledore is the worst headmaster the school's ever had. Well, he's bragging that to Crabbe and Goyle, but I think it's funny because actually he told that to Harry and Ron when they were... posing as Crabbe and Goyle.
That's so true. That's so funny. Yeah. I totally did not pick up on that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. He thinks he told Crabbe and Goyle, but Crabbe and Goyle are like,
I don't think you said that. Yeah. When did you say that, Draco? I can't imagine them calling him. I imagine they call him Malfoy too.
Oh yeah, almost certainly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. This is another one of those where I don't remember this being brought to attention so early though. But he's talking about getting a new decent headmaster, someone who won't want this Chamber of Secrets closed. McGonagall won't last long. She's only filling in. It's like McGonagall's role as deputy headmistress has basically been around since the beginning.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I think that that's like one of those where I thought it was like shoehorned in more like after the fact. Like, of course we're going to have a Gryffindor leading, you know, like
of course,
when
of
all
course.
Else fails, yeah. It's like, it's got to be McGonagall and no one else. But no, pretty much the whole time it's always been McGonagall.
There's a couple of things on this page too, about Snape that I really like, where Malfoy saying like, sir, why don't you apply for the headmaster job? And his response is, Professor Dumbledore has only been suspended by the governor, so I dare say he'll be back with us soon enough. And it's just like, there's like a line there that's like, he couldn't suppress a thin lip smile or whatever. But it's like, at the end of the day, Snape's sentiment here is like it's him being loyal to Dumbledore. You know, he's like, it's like, Draco, don't be ridiculous. Dumbledore, he'll be back.
right. Yeah, you're right, because the way that this whole page is written, it definitely, it's like when it reads the way that you're reading it, you see the worst in Snape,
yeah.
as if he's like kind of glad
right.
that Dumbledore
he's
has
like
gone
maybe
on.
I will get the job, or I'm just saying these things like to placate anyone who might hear me or something.
Right. Yeah. Because you're right. We got the thin lip smile. And then on the next page or the next chapter or the next paragraph, if I get my words right, it says, I'll tell Father you're the best teacher here, sir. And it says Snape smirked as he walked off around the dungeon. It's like, yeah, you're right. But like literally the only thing Snape has actually said is just basically posting his allegiance
To Dumbledore.
Yeah. So it's easy to like misinterpret it because you're just sort of like, I'm sure he'll be back soon enough. And it's like, he's like, but he will be back.
But Snape is like, he knows. He's like, yeah, this isn't going to work out anyone who's not Dumbledore.
Right.
Can't skate Bastet. Malfoy goes on, says, bet you 5 galleons the next one dies. Pity it wasn't Granger. Like, dude,
I wrote, geez.
What a little turd, man.
Oh, man. I know. Malfoy, especially in his earlier years, I've said it before, and it's like I'll say it again. You know, it's like I've tried historically to come to Malfoy's defense. And it's sort of like, you know, he's parroting the beliefs of his parents. But he says some really mean things. But I also do think that in general, and no offense to any middle schoolers who may be listening, but I do think middle schoolers can be a rather dangerous breed when it comes to the things that they say, because I think they've learned enough to know how to cause damage, but haven't learned quite so much as to have a conscience about it.
Right.
So they just say the meanest
things.
They just
say things.
And I mean, you know, and this is true. We all had our high school experiences. It's like you're not safe from it in high school either. But I do think as time goes on, people start to realize the impact of their words.
Yeah.
And they start to be more careful about
yeah,
it. So,
I think so.
Probably one of those things where it's like, yep. it's about on par for a mean 12-year-old.
Yes, yes. Let's see. And then I think Snape has another good line here. It's like, it would seem like a throwaway line, but it's the end of class and he says, "Hurry up, I've got to take you all to Herbology," which is just like clearly the professors have been instructed to escort the students around, but like Snape is genuinely doing it. And like he is escorting them.
Right.
You know, he is doing his duty. And it's like, even that speaks to like, I don't think the school is going to be closed, because if I thought the school was going to be closed and there wasn't any chance of this, I wouldn't even bother following these rules.
Oh, sure.
Or whatever. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, but like he is doing it. He is concerned about the student safety.
Right.
Which is like another, like, you wouldn't notice it because it also says he barks this over the class's head and then like, you know, whatever. It seems like he's being mean about it. That's sort of his thing. He's like, I am helpful, but I must appear mean.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, got to keep up appearances for all those kids with like the pure blood Slytherin parents. You know,
yeah.
former Death Eaters and such. Mm-hmm. The barked, I think, is interesting because they frequently use barked as how like Sirius laughs
yeah.
and things. So it's like maybe Snape is summoning his inner Sirius Black.
Oh, of course, yeah, yes, you know, yes.
His old BFF from his school days.
Absolutely. Let's see. So next page here, we're in Herbology. Here, I highlighted Obsidian Shrivel Fig just to see if there's anything unique about that. It has been used across the Harry Potter canon in several ways. Namely, in the book, the only times you see it used in the books is for the shrinking solution.
Okay.
And it's actually for third years, so I'm not sure why they're dealing with them at all. Because that's obviously a potions ingredient then. But it's also a potion ingredient in the Elixir to Induce Euphoria and the Thunder Brew, which is like a weapon in Hogwarts Legacy. Yeah. And then,
Thunder!
Yeah. Actually, the Elixir to Induce Euphoria is also a Half-Blood Prince video game reference. So in the books, it's just for the shrinking solution. So I'm not sure what they're doing with Obsidian Shrivel Figs here.
So we're getting reference to them now, but they will be a potion ingredient next year?
Yes.
Okay. I don't hate that, though. Because I mean, it seems like maybe the growing and handling of them could be something that's like essential to their usage of them in the following school year.
Yeah, I guess that's
so
true.
Maybe growing them is less dangerous than using them in their magical capacity.
I guess so, but they're like they're handling the mandrakes too.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. Kind
anyway.
Of.
Anyway, that's just a little fun fact about shrivel figs.
Yeah, I mean, people, that's what they tune in for. They're like,
don't skip over that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pear Eyewear. Y'all, I'm so excited for our upcoming Through the Griffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pear Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped because like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good. And they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening, it's already passed. But like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing in. I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can. And it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think honestly kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code GRIFFIN for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PAIREyewear.com, code Griffin.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership, because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
But so then we immediately go to Ernie McMillan, who is basically stepping forward and apologizing for the way that he has treated Harry, basically in lieu of the attack on Hermione. And it's interesting because it is this sort of like, I mean, it feels like a pretty genuine apology. Like, I think all things being equal, if you wanted your kid to apologize to a fellow classmate and they said these words, you'd be pretty satisfied with the apology itself. But yeah. It does remind me of just Ernie's sort of like, he kind of has like a endearing smarminess. Mm-hmm. About him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's very like if he were out here in the real world, he would be really big about like going to like networking events.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Like just us old DA lags. That's one of my favorite lines in the whole series.
It really is like one of those things. We go way back. We did that one thing together
exactly,
once.
Right,
like,
yes.
Yeah. So it does seem like Ernie sort of got like at his heart of hearts, it's sort of like, you know, build bridges, not barriers or whatever the phrase is.
He's like a little slughorn in training, you know?
He kind of is. You know? Yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Down there.
Just like I'm collecting people.
I'm collecting people.
Positions.
But I don't think Slughorn collects him though, does he?
Maybe not.
No.
Maybe
oh, not so too much. Bad.
He's a prefect, though, eventually.
Oh, you're right. I think he is. Maybe. Is he at the Slug Club party? McMillan? I don't know. Yeah, I don't think so.
We'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Let's see here. But then he immediately is like, I do like that he's not proud enough to admit that he's wrong. Then he immediately dives in, participates in the same exact behavior, just now focusing it at Draco instead of Harry.
Yeah.
To which Harry, or I guess Ron, is just like, I'm not forgiving you so quick. Like, it's not him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ron has certainly like went through it this year in terms of, you know, polyjuicing into Crab and everything. So, I mean, he's got good reason to sort of be like, no, it's not him.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is hilarious that this is Ernie sort of like, you know, like showing some humility and apologizing, and then immediately being like, hey, I'm sorry, I thought it was you, but now I think it's someone else.
Right.
But now you can be on my side about
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, trying to find our common enemy to join together over.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Speaking of common enemy here, I love the, there's a line, Harry hit Ron over the hand with his pruning shears, which just seems like dangerous.
Yeah.
What, maybe tap him on the shoulder, Harry.
Right, right. There's other things than hitting people with scissors.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's see. But it's Harry spotting some spiders heading into the forest, and he's trying to convince Ron to go do it. And Ron says, aren't there supposed to be werewolves in the forest? Which, this is always interesting to me, because you'd think this doesn't feel like the sort of thing Ron wouldn't know about. Like, right. Having grown up in the wizarding world, that, like, werewolves, like, I don't know, don't, you know, are only in wolf form for one night a month.
Yeah, no, it does seem strange that this would be something. And the thing, because I highlighted that same thing, is it not the exact same question that Draco asks when they're going in?
It is. And so I looked up, because I was like, I feel like we brought this up last time as well. And so just as a reminder of why people are concerned about werewolves in the forest, and is there a threat? Uh-huh. And the answer is there are, quote unquote, werewolves in the forest, but no, there is not a threat. So the way it works is, and I'm just going to read this straight from the Pottermore article.
Okay,
is,
go ahead.
One curious feature of the condition is that if two werewolves meet and mate at the full moon, a highly unlikely contingency which is known to have occurred only twice, the result of the mating will be wolf cubs, which resemble true wolves in everything except their abnormally high intelligence. They are not more aggressive than normal wolves and do not single out humans for attack. Such a litter was once set free under conditions of extreme secrecy in the Forbidden Forest at Hogwarts with the kind permission of Albus Dumbledore. The cubs grew into beautiful and unusually intelligent wolves, and some of them live there still, which has given rise to stories about werewolves in the forest. None of the teachers or gamekeeper have done much to dispel this, because keeping students out of the forest is, in their view, highly desirable.
Interesting.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, so this is my mind is jumping around. Obviously, like, we've got like the Romulus and Remus reference already being used in the series in the form of Remus's name.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically the people raised by wolves, the boys raised by wolves.
That's the founders story of Rome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is kind of interesting about that, though, is I, inside of this chapter in particular, am extremely curious about what, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but what enables the Weasleys flying Ford Anglia to, like, sort of take on this, like, magical life of its own, you know, to the tune of, like, it like, for all intents and purposes, is an inanimate object that had a unique ability to fly, but, like, it doesn't really suggest any major reason why it would have, like, started to, like, form its own sentience,
right,
if you will.
Yeah.
But especially in a capacity where it would, like, come charging in to protect Harry and Ron.
Yeah, it seems to have some sort of loyalty still to, like, Ron as its former owner.
Right, right.
Right.
So it feels like a leap. I don't even know if it's really that close, but, like, in a way, I'm like, was the Ford Anglia, like, taken under the wing by a couple of werewolves, like werewolf cubs?
Right.
Where it was, like, you know, like, raised and taught, like, a similar form of like, loyalty to its former master or something like that.
Oh, man, that's... I don't know, because we never see any of these wolves in the forest.
No,
it almost
seems
like we should have.
It does feel that way.
Yeah.
Because it seems like on that basis, it almost feels like what is being described as the product of two werewolves mating and having a wolf cub is almost like a kind of noble creature.
It reminds me of, like, the dire wolves in Game of Thrones, almost.
Oh, yes. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like, larger, bigger.
Like, larger, bigger, smarter, not aggressive. Well, potentially aggressive, but not targeted at humans.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. But also extreme loyalty to their masters as well. So, I could see that. So anyway, I mean, this is like something that I think we could probably make a whole video about, and I don't have an answer to as I'm speaking out loud, but the Ford Anglia and like what brings it that sentience is something that I think needs further explanation.
It does. It just sort of seems like it's like, how much magic did Mr. Weasley put in that thing?
I know. Yeah. Some serious like blood, sweat, and tears apparently.
I know. Cause like it basically has like a mind of its own, you know?
Yeah.
Apparently not even running on gas or anything now, just running on magic.
Just running on magic.
Just a wild car out there.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, here we go. This is a like, quick reminder, too, that like as they're going in there, like Ron had never been into the Forbidden Forest. That's like one of those so easy to miss things because like in their first year, it's just Harry, Hermione, Neville, and Draco who get sent into the forest. And it's like, oh, yeah, Ron wasn't there.
I know. That's like one of the most baffling like realizations like way after the fact, or if it's been a minute since you've like read the books, it's sort of like, wait, Ron, I've not been there for it. Like, why would he have not gotten in trouble when they got in trouble? Like,
right.
How could he, for plot reasons, not be needed?
Because Norbert bit his hand and he was stuck in the hospital wing, so Harry and Hermione had to carry Norbert all the way up to the astronomy tower in one sentence. Like, oh, that was hard.
Oh, darn. Yep, you're exactly right. the other thing, though, on that exact same line, so it says, Ron had never been into the Forbidden Forest before. Harry had entered it only once and had hoped to never do so again. And I highlighted that because, like, that's one of those moments where when you go back to Harry's entrance into the Forbidden Forest the first time, the centaurs are being, like, really kind of, like, uptight about this particular situation mm-hmm. based on the cast of characters that happen to be present and their ability to read signs based on the stars.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're like, Voldemort is in the forest. Harry is in the forest. The stars tell us, or Mars tells us, that, like, this is symbolic of what is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So Harry's apprehension to re-enter the forest again is almost kind of fascinating because like eventually it is where he will go to die.
Right.
So and that's basically what the centaurs have slightly off is they don't think that you like look at tea leaves and can understand what's going to happen next Tuesday. They look at like the large planetary movements and know that something will happen during a span of some amount of time.
Right. Like if they're off by, you know, what, 7 years, like whatever, that's a cosmic rounding error.
Precisely.
You know, but if to them it's like, oh, the odds of all of these things, like us knowing that it's going to happen and all the people being here at the same time, it's like, well, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, the table is set.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's watch it unfold.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, Harry's apprehension, I think, is sort of like, it's like good. It's like he's got like a good gut instinct about the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah.
Like, it could be dangerous.
Yes. Well, I mean, he almost died last time and he's almost going to die this time. So there you go. Meanwhile, it's time for Lockhart to show up.
Your favorite.
I know. Everyone's favorite. Don't you people realize the dangerous past? The culprit has been taken away. And as my only note there was like, it's comforting to me that nobody is comforted by this.
I know. Yeah, I feel like Dean Thomas gets like a nice little one-liner here. It just says like, you know, Lockhart says that, and Dean says who?
Yeah,
to Dean Thomas loudly. I feel like Dean is like Seamus sort of has this like quiet little like comic relief that he can provide here and there. But I feel like Dean is always kind of got like his finger ever so slightly like on the pulse. Like it seems like, like Dean, he's not like a major character. He doesn't do like a lot of stuff out loud, like anything like that. But he always seems like kind and sort of has like the right take.
Yeah.
You know, so just shout out to Dean.
Shout out to Dean, you know,
for having it.
Yes. I love Lockhart goes on. I love his like just belief that like they wouldn't have taken Hagrid if they weren't sure it was him. And it's sort of like you can almost see his point. You know, it's like, why aren't more people comforted by the fact that like they took the person who did it last time?
I know.
And it's like, well, it's really because you have such faith in it, Lockhart. And, you know,
it's actually rather like Dursley-ish as well. Like total faith in the establishment.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
I forget the instance where it comes up, but it feels like, I think that like Vernon is mildly comforted by the fact that there's like a wizarding government.
Yes.
And he's sort of like, well, the government probably knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, leave it to them to think the government's got it all squared away.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, they are just especially corrupt in the wizarding world.
Right.
I love the next sentence. It says, I flatter myself I know a touch more about Hagrid's arrest than you do, Mr. Weasley. And I highlighted, I flatter myself. And I was like, that was the actual end of that sentence. I flatter myself next.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's but it. Yeah. Like, but also, what does he know more about Hagrid's arrest? If anything, in this particular moment, Ron knows more about
it. Well, that's
it
the thing.
Ron was there.
Ron, that's what's so fun. It's like as much as you might think, like, you might, you know, you can pretty much tell Lockhart's obviously lying about everything, but like, here's just clear cut proof. It's like, I know more about it than you do. And it's like, you literally don't. I was literally there. I know you don't know more because I was literally there.
Right.
You know, it's like, right. you're straight up lying. And now I know for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, any shadow of doubt, gone. Not None. That there was much, but
yeah.
Oh, let's see. What do we have next here? Oh, just by their in defense against the Dark Arts, Harry passes Ron a note saying, let's do it tonight. Looks over and realizes Hermione's not there. Stiffens his resolve and is like, nope, we got to do it. Yeah. Which I love that. I love that it's like, oh, it's really Hermione that gets him to face his fear with the spiders.
I know. We've brought this up a couple of times. And the reason I feel like it stands out to me is because, like I've said, you know, I've kind of been like Team Hermione for a long time. But like when you are combing through and you kind of like catch these like tiny little moments,
tiny things.
It's like, okay, the setup for Ron and Hermione is not nothing.
Yeah.
Like it's there. They're small. But you're right. I even wrote down, I was like, this is actually pretty sweet. Like, it's adorable that like Ron is like, all right, I don't want to face the spiders, but we got to do it for Hermione.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Got to do it for the team.
Yep. All right. Next up, we have Harry and Ron trying to stay up late and outpace the rest of the Gryffindors in the common room so they can sneak out. We get another little nod to Ginny, who's watching them very subdued in Hermione's usual chair. And it's like, I feel like the fact that she's sitting in, quote, Hermione's usual chair makes you feel like she's upset about Hermione, which I'm going to guess she is.
Sure.
But it's like, it's as if she's upset because someone was attacked, not because she did the attacking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I follow you. I follow you.
A little more misdirect there.
Yep.
And then they sneak out. They have to dodge all of the teachers, which just like, are none of the teachers sleeping now? Like everyone's awake all the time?
Yeah. This is like one of those things where like, you know, if there's like a glass door assessment of working at Hogwarts, it's like, yeah, you work long hours, late nights, you don't get a lot of sleep, high stress.
Yeah.
We're constantly under attack.
Yeah.
It's like not a good place to work.
It's good. Slughorn's not even happy with his pay, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Also, speaking of glass doors, though, they do manage to slid back the lock on the oak front doors. And I'm just like, teachers, you're patrolling the halls all night and no one's on the front door and you're not magically locking it?
Right.
Like,
right.
Come on.
Does anybody remember the third floor corridor?
Does anyone?
At bare minimum, they had to use a first year spell to protect that one.
I know. This one is just like, I'll just click. Okay, right out the front door.
No big deal.
Yeah. Like, there's no other exit you guys could have taken. There's no other side door by the greenhouses or something or whatever. Nope. Out the front door. Totally, totally easy. No problem at all, despite the guards. Whatever. It's fine.
Yep.
They get to Hagrid's hut. I love that they get Fang to stop barking by feeding him a treacle toffee from Hagrid's cooking, which glues his teeth together.
I know. It's so fun. It's like, oh my gosh, how is any normal person, if Fang can't eat it, how is anyone eating?
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
And then yet I never understand. Harry is like determined not to use the invisibility cloak sometimes. And it's like, oh yeah, he left the invisibility cloak in Hagrid's table. There'd be no need for it in the pitch dark forest. And I'm like, you can't possibly know that.
Right. Yeah. It's like you've got like this like ace in the hole magical object with you. And it's like, why would I need invisibility?
It'll be dark.
It's going to be fine. That's an interesting one too, because as far as like throwaway lines that are meant to explain something later, it's sort of like, this doesn't really come up at all. It's not like Harry ends up like losing the cloak or anything vitally important.
Right. So. Yeah. Like you could have just had it with him and not use it. Speaking of non-important lines, as they leave, it says, come on, Fang, we're going for a walk, said Harry, patting his leg. And Fang bounded happily out of the house behind them, dashed to the edge of Forge, and lifted his leg against the large sycamore tree. He's like, well, thanks for that.
You know, it's an excellent visual. However, there is also another prominent sycamore tree at one other scene in the series, and it's only one other scene.
Oh.
And it happens to be another Ron and Harry and Hermione-less adventure, and it's when they're getting ready to destroy the locket. There's, I think that they set it on like the stump of a sycamore tree.
Oh, did you look up sycamore trees?
I did, because I was sort of like, because I thought the same thing. I was like, this line is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then
why do we need to hear about Fang peeing?
Right. Yeah. But the other interesting thing as well is that if you look into the sycamore wood as like a wand wood, it is described as a questing wand wood and loves adventure.
Oh, and so this is like the start of a quest. Maybe.
It's a little bit of start of a quest. Mm. Yeah. So symbolic of questing, maybe. Ah, a little bit,
okay.
Which I would also argue Horcrux hunting is very.
Very questy.
Very questy, yep. Very so, questy. I mean, that's it's not like deeply, deeply important or anything like that, nor would it be information you should just or would know, but I was like, is there anything to sycamore trees? And that's the best I came up with.
That's, you know what? It's good enough for me.
Okay,
good
we'll
enough
take
for
it.
Me.
We'll take it.
Let's see. Then they go for what feels like up to an hour-long walk into the woods. It says they walk behind... the spiders for 20 minutes. And then the next page, it says they walked for what seemed like at least half an hour. So I can't tell if it's 30 minutes total or 50 minutes total, but
right.
Man, are they deep in the woods.
That would be
50 minutes in one direction at like 1 a.m.
In the darkness.
In the darkness.
I would be terrified.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I would be super scared.
You are far away.
Yes.
I can't imagine Hagrid doing this. How often is he visiting Aragog? You know?
I bet often.
They
play cards every Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Play cards.
He cheats.
He's got all those eyes. Well, I guess he's blind. Let's see. But okay, so this is one of the things. They sort of leave it out of the movie. Prior to getting to the clearing, they come across the car in its own clearing. And I guess what's being done here is just reminding you that the car exists and now it's in the forest because it's about to have like its big moment.
Right, right. The thing about the car traveling through the forest, especially in such darkness, is it's like then there to the right came a sudden blaze of light. It's like if a car is fully lit up in the middle of a completely pitch black forest, you can see it really far away.
Oh yeah, for like, sure.
It's not hiding. I mean, I guess it could just be rumbling around with no lights on, and when it sees them,
that's sort of what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of flicks its lights on at that point in time.
Right.
Yeah. Which I mean, this is the real question. I don't know why I'm so stuck on it, but I am like, what is going on with the car?
Yeah.
Why is the car able to return to some measure of life? Like, do we have anything, any other basis for like an inanimate object, like that sort of thinks for itself? He says, as it's a book about the diary.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's that, but it's like the car's not like a Horcrux. I mean,
right?
Unless you, I mean, maybe Mr. Weasley like literally just poured his soul into fixing it or something.
Which I mean, on some level, I guess could make sense because like we know that this is how portraits work in the wizarding world. Is that like
right.
That's true. Like,
portraits are kind of like this, aren't they?
Yeah, like they're sort of like. Quasi-sentient.
Yeah, they're quasi-sentient. There's like brooms, which Harry says like they're kind of like horses. Like they can tell when you're afraid.
That's a good point too. That's a good point too. And that's another like
vehicle.
Vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you will. Hmm. So I can maybe see that. Like or even like wands, you know, like learn from the wizard and the wizard learns from the wand as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
there's a little bit of that going on.
You know what?
What you got?
Oh, okay.
Wait on me. I'm excited.
Here we go. What I wonder if there's any like thestralness to the flying Ford Anglia.
Ooh.
Because the invisibility booster.
Yeah.
It has the ability to become invisible and it can fly.
It's not the wolves that's training it, it's the thestrals.
It's the thestrals. Ooh.
The flying. Yes, because thestrals can fly. Thestrals can be invisible.
Yeah.
The car can fly. The car can become invisible. So like maybe the car can join the flock of thestrals, which we know Hagrid has the only trained herd in Britain.
Yeah. But I almost wonder though, like I wonder like if is this how he's getting, like we have the whole theory about the night bus is a Zowu.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, is the Anglia a thestral?
Oh my god.
You know what I mean?
Jeez. That would be some powerful.
That would be
magic.
Like, yeah. That I mean, obviously, we know that he just bought the car and fixed it up and replaced it. So, like, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
But like, there's a bunch of correlations here.
I don't hate the fact that we know that thestrals, which share these abilities with the Anglia, live inside of the forest. And the car itself sort of like takes on a life of its own, and it's like, where is it learning from, and like, what is it getting?
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I like the idea that like that it's even possible in this situation that there are thestrals around them.
That's true. That's true. They could have thestrals around them. We just wouldn't know yet.
We just wouldn't know.
Oh.
I love it when it's thestrals.
I love it when I know. Thestrals are their part. So other thing, okay. Other helpful bit there, though, is that like the elder wand is especially sentient. And yes. Its core is a thestral tail hair.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There we go. Sentience. Thestrals lend sentience to things.
Oh, what a sentence.
Yes.
What is, okay. 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 Good thinking. Good thinking. You did better than me with my wolves. I was close. I was dancing around it.
Yeah. We were there. Thing in the woods. Thing in the woods. Okay. All right. So let's see. We find the car, and then did they leave this out of the movie? I did not remember this at all. The spiders show up and just like pick them up and carry them the rest of the way.
Yes. I also, that does not happen in the movie. I had forgotten about this as well, that they're like medium grade, like incapacitated for this particular exchange.
Right.
It is more at least what happens inside of the Lord of the Rings movies where Frodo does get just sort of like yoinked.
Yep. All right.
And all wrapped up. It's very creepy. I hate that scene.
Yeah. Shelob.
Shelob.
Let's see. I love the way they describe it as Harry laid eyes onto the worst scene he'd ever laid eyes on. And I was like, that sounds about right. If I like, I'm just trying to imagine, like, what would your reaction be? You just like walk down to your basement and you open the door and you can't even see the floor for the number of spiders. I'd just be like, well, we're moving. That's pretty much it.
That's it. I'm not coming back.
We have lost.
I will never re-enter this space.
Nope. Gone. Yeah. That would be so scary. Gosh. Anyway, then there's Ron. Ron looked exactly like Harry felt. His mouth was stretched wide to kind of silent scream, and his eyes were popping. I could just yell. Like, you don't even if you're not afraid of spiders, this is scary.
This is like one of those things though where I feel like they set up very early on that Harry, like, you know, when he wakes up in the cupboard under the stairs, like, you know, he has spiders all around him. Harry has some comfort with spiders in general.
And so it's
always kind of like an interesting one because that doesn't come back to play despite the fact that like his next exchange with another creature in the first book is basically with the boa constrictor at the zoo. And his ability to speak parcel tongue is super important to the overall plot. That's a huge deal. But the parallels between Hagrid's relationship with Harry, who grows up with like spiders in his cupboard, and Hagrid himself, who grew up raising a spider in a cupboard.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it feels like I can't exactly like bridge the gap perfectly, but like what the connection is, but it feels like it's something.
Yeah, it kind of does. You're right. There's a bunch of parallels there.
Yeah.
Spiders and whatnot.
Right.
But so now we finally meet Aragog, gray in the black of his body. And in each of the eyes on his ugly pincered head was milky white. He was blind, which is okay. So question about this. If you're blind, are you capable of being killed or petrified by the basilisk? Right? Like, it has to fix you with its stare, but like you can't see anything.
That's a good question.
So like Aragog's petrified. Aragog is terrified of the basilisk, but like, is he even in danger? Right. I mean, I guess it gets to like bite him, but
I know this. I mean, it's even like the glasses question. It's like glasses don't seem like they're enough, but like other lenses, like a camera, are.
Right.
You know,
seems like glasses kinda should be. Myrtle.
Yeah. Seems like she should have been okay.
Yeah.
And Harry too. No, completely safe.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been? Oh, no, he would have been petrified. Even I was gonna say, wouldn't it have been hilarious if like Harry's in there and he's like, "But I have safety goggles.
Yeah.
My glasses.
Right. I've got my basilisk goggles on here. They're regular glasses. It's fine.
Right. But he would still be petrified.
Yeah. He'd still be petrified. So and then he'd probably kill him anyway.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that that's been his MO. The rest of the book is like petrified. Ah, oh, butts. I didn't get him with my laser eyes. Guess I have no other way of killing them. See ya.
Certainly not the most poisonous poison known to wizard kind.
Certainly not just razor sharp teeth that I continuously talk about, like rip them, tear them, let me eat them. All right, see ya.
Yeah, you talk a big game.
Talk Mr. a big game, Basilisk. Mr. He's like,
Basilisk.
Apparently it's like, maybe he's like, oh, I can get it. Maybe he wants to like cook the food with his laser vision.
Oh,
you know, and he's like, oh, I petrified him again. Now what?
Maybe what's happening is he's going through the tunnels, and because he's been absent for so long, the spiders have put up a whole bunch of webs, and he's just like, rip these webs, tear these webs. They're in my way.
They're in my way. Ah, so annoying. So many cobwebs. That would be so funny if he's not talking about people. He's just like, dude, I hate spiders. Oh my God, I hate spiders.
I'm so glad they hate me back.
they better hate me, because if I see one of them, oh my gosh, I love that idea. Rip them, tear them's about the spider webs. Oh my God, I'm gonna be laughing about that all day. Okay, here we go. Let's see. All right, so they start talking about to Aragog about Hagrid. They think about the school that Hagrid's been setting something on the students. They've taken him to Azkaban, and Aragog responds and says, "But that was years ago." Which I'm like, "Wait, was it? Did he go to Azkaban before? Because I don't think he did, right, Hagrid?"
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't
think so.
No, yeah.
So maybe he just means that they suspected him. They believed I was the monster that dwells in what they call the Chamber of Secrets. They thought Hagrid had opened the Chamber of Secrets and set me free, and confirms that he did not. Clicking angrily. I like the way they're clicking, you know?
Yeah, I know, yeah, yeah. Kind of a nice setup for later when Harry's observation about the pincers.
Yes, and yeah, right. And now we learn where Hagrid got Aragog, sort of, just from a traveler. We already sort of talked about this. Kept him in an egg in his pocket, which we suspect is Newt Scamander. Great bit of trivia. What is Aragog's wife's name? Do you know?
Yep. Are you answering out loud right now?
Yeah.
Did you totally nail it?
Do you
remember the one time it's ever mentioned? It's Mossag.
It's Mossag, yes.
Mossag.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know why that's brought up. Never brought up again.
Yeah, but you just remembered it in trivia once upon a time.
Because it is such a trivia question.
It is such a trivia
question. It's like included for the sake of this, it feels like.
Yes.
Let's see. And then Harry says, like, you never attacked anyone? He says, never. It would have been my instinct, but out of respect for Hagrid, I never harmed a human until like 3 minutes from now when I will eat you, friends of Hagrid.
Right.
Yeah. Real hypocrisy here, right. Giant Spider-Man.
It is an interesting setup because it's the line out of respect for Hagrid. It's sort of like it needs to define Aragog's innocence back when. Like, no, I would never do that out of respect for Hagrid. It's like in other circumstances, yes, no, I absolutely would have been a danger to everyone.
I would, yeah. I'm like, I'm looking at that school every day with my blind eyes, like, oh my God, I could just eat them students up. But Hagrid, but
what a
Hagrid.
Feast, but Hagrid. But Hagrid. It's like Hagrid is really vital to the safety of the school.
This is Hagrid's real job security. He's like, oh, you don't want me here. Oh, well, I just... Oh, I might head into the forest real quick and have a quick chat with someone I know. So don't worry about it. It's fine.
That's really like Hagrid from the very beginning. He was always like, if anybody ever tries to take me from the school, I'm going to send them right at the spiders.
Yeah.
Because without me here, they're doomed.
They're doomed. Or I'm going to send the spiders right to them.
Right. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, that's his big ace in the hole. That's why he's really sticking around, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then I love. It's interesting that the spider is considered the basilisk, an ancient creature. We spiders fear above all others. Well, do I remember how I pleaded with Hagrid to let me go when I sensed the beast moving about the school. So they can't like just sense it.
So that must be what's going on with the rest of the spiders. I just can't imagine a world where the rest of the spiders, like, maybe they all go and they like come to again like Aragog's, you know, like. House or whatever to hang.
Aragog's house.
I've said the glade too many times, and I don't know why, because I keep just trying to think the nest, the burrow, the place that they go. So house.
Yeah, his house.
All the spiders go to his house, but it does sound like instinctively they're just sort of like spider sense going off.
Yep, literal spider sense going off.
Spider sense. Yeah, that's a thing,
there
isn't
it?
Is. It?
Yeah. Yes, that's like Spider-Man's real power at the end of the day.
Right.
It's like
right.
why he's so hard to beat all the time. He's got like a tiny bit of precognition going.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, but yeah, they don't name it. We do not speak of it. Never even told Hagrid the name of the dread creature, though he asked me many times. It's surprising that Hagrid like knows as much about acromantulas that he does and doesn't know about them fearing basilisks.
You're right. And I mean, I guess, I don't know. Yeah. Cause I mean, basilisk is in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And the information is included inside of it.
Yeah. It's like, it almost must be the case that like, they're incredibly rare and basically don't exist.
Maybe that's know? It. Like, maybe that's like, it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you wouldn't even know to know about them or something.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But there is still books about them because Hermione finds it. So I don't know.
Also true. Also, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's always kind of like a little goofy is that, like, you know, as young students who haven't had like a lifetime of like learning about the wizarding world and stuff like that, it's like they might not be privy to information like this, but it does seem like anybody who's taken extensive training on magical beasts, like, you know, if Dumbledore's like, hey, there's something petrifying students in my school. Any experts out there have any idea what might be causing this?
Right.
Like, surely someone would be like, yeah, it could be a basilisk. Yeah. It's an indirect stare. Like someone should be able to send that. Like, let me send you right. my peer review journal.
Yeah, like why isn't Dumbledore sending an owl to Newt? You know.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just like, hey, FYI, bit of a snafu here at the castle.
Newt's like, I'm sorry, but we opened the hot dog stand. We are way too busy.
Know, like, we're raising our measles.
Yeah, this is that's a deep cut reference to Tina, his now wife, eating a hot dog in the opening scene when we meet her in Fantastic Beasts. In case anybody missed it, I doubt they did because everybody listening is like, you know, they're
deep into it.
They're like, I know that mustard only ketchup that Tina eats.
That's right. Why would that be the way she's introduced? Oh my gosh. She's like otherwise such a cool person.
She's very cool. Yeah. It feels like not in keeping with the rest of her character, but I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Anyway. So, Aragog, decides that any respect he was showing Hagrid is now's the time to drop it. And he's like, go ahead, family, eat these kids, do it. Hagrid won't mind for sure. It's surprising that he doesn't know about Harry Potter. You know, what is Hagrid not talking to him about Harry? This seems like a great time for Harry to be like, I'm the chosen one.
Yeah.
This is
Harry, you can occasionally play that card when it's true.
Right. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't know that. I guess he doesn't know that about himself yet, but it still seems he could be like, I'm Harry Potter. I'm Harry Potter. Voldemort. Me did it.
Aragog's like, Voldemort, you mean Tom Riddle? You mean the guy who framed Hagrid?
Hold on.
We're on the same team all of a sudden.
Yeah. Back off, spiders. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, if only. Harry, you got to name drop some, man. You know.
I know. He's too humble.
He's too humble in this situation. Almost gets him killed. Thankfully, there's a Thestral car lurking about in the woods, and it's just like, I got you. Shows up. Snaps off some side mirrors. I can't believe the side mirror is only just being off now.
I had the same note. Yeah. I was like, surely these have broken already.
I know, right? They're gone. They're gone on day one.
Yeah.
Yes. And then I gotta love Harry having just the ultimate faith in Hagrid. He says, I bet he thought Aragog wouldn't hurt friends of his, said Harry. And it's like, Harry, it's okay to be a little mad. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to stick up for Hagrid just now. I'm kind of with Ron on this one.
Hagrid may have messed up a little bit. Yeah. Ron, even on the next page, it says, evidently hatching Aragog in a cupboard wasn't his idea of being innocent.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. I mean, fair.
Yes. Then they make the same connection we do that the basilisk sounds like a sort of monster Voldemort. Even other monsters didn't want to name it. And that sentence right there is almost just like supposed to be your connective glue that, like, hey, Tom Riddle's Voldemort.
Right.
Figure it out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I highlighted the same thing for the same reason, because it is very much like that. Like, he who must not be named, and the spiders like will not name it.
Right. Because like, it's like at this point, you'd have no reason to think Voldemort's involved in the story at all.
No, not really. Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, he hasn't really come up. And last we saw him, he was sort of defeated by Harry.
And just sort of like the only person you met is Tom Riddle. And,
right.
You know, even if you know it's Tom Riddle, you still have no idea that Tom Riddle is Voldemort.
Right.
But like this, that sentence is your last big clue.
Yes. Yeah. Because, I mean, like, as like a young reader, especially, it's like, and without the rest of the series and the knowledge that Voldemort goes on to be so important, like, that's the mindset that's hard to get back inside of. Like, Voldemort could have just been the villain of book one, and like book two will have a completely different villain by like a completely different name. And it's just sort of like, but no, they're the same. It's always Voldemort.
Yeah, it's always Voldemort. Let's see. Then Riddle caught the wrong person. That's what I have next highlighted here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, as we close out the chapter, like the really big thing is that like Harry sort of. Like this is where you can see that like his instincts as like a future potential auror could be like coming to the table, because he is sort of like we were talking about earlier. It's like, it's not just like his magical prowess. It's like, it is his bravery. It's all the other intangibles. It's like the way that like he sets his mind to like working a problem and doesn't really like let it go. But like, you know, going and having met with Aragog leaves him like without a lot of of solid, solid answers.
Right.
Now what he needs to do is use all the information he's collected so far and put it together.
Yeah.
And basically it's like, you know, we learn about like the girl who was attacked in the bathroom, and like Harry's just sitting there laying in bed, like racking his mind, like who could it be? Like what could happen? Like we have, I don't know where to turn next. And it's like, oh, wait a second. What if?
Yeah.
Could it be Myrtle?
Could it be Myrtle? Could it be Myrtle? And it's like, he also gets so close. He's like, Riddle caught the wrong person. And it's like he still hasn't figured out that it's Tom yet either.
Right.
And it's like, because like, here's the thing. Riddle caught the wrong person, and yet the attacks do stop. So it's like, they catch Hagrid, and then the attacks stop. So it's like, what did you think? Like that the person who was doing it was like, whoa, near miss. Guess I better just stop now.
Right, right.
Like, I'll let Hagrid take the fall. Because like, someone who's out there like willing to kill people isn't going to just like stop. They'd be like, oh, Hagrid got taken? Who cares? I'm going to keep going.
They still don't suspect me.
They still don't suspect me.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Like, great, I've still got more opportunity. But it's like, no, Tom didn't want the school to close, and the attack stopped after Hagrid. It was Tom.
You could figure it out. Like, this is the type of thing where it's like, again, I go back. If it's like, if this was being released as like a TV show, and you had like a week between episodes, and everybody was like on the internet, like all like exchanging their ideas and stuff, it'd be like, y'all, this Tom Riddle character, we've just been introduced to him.
Well, because it's also like the Scooby-Doo scenario where it's just like, it's like, there's, you only met two people in the past, and it was Hagrid and Tom Riddle. And now you know it wasn't Hagrid. So it's like, well,
we only met
three adults in this movie, in this episode, that weren't the gang. And it's one of them.
Right, right. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I mean, that pretty much brings us to the end of the chapter.
It does. The thing, it's like the big question I always have is like, how did nobody ask Myrtle about her death?
I know.
This whole time, like, it seems so out of character for just like, for Dumbledore.
It seems out of character for Myrtle.
For Myrtle to not be like constantly whining about it.
Yes, yeah. Like, you know, it's like she, like, I imagine a world where it's like, this is not something that she doesn't, like, she's a genuine victim of this particular situation. Like, it seems like she would definitely bring it up for the, like, if nothing, I mean, rightfully so, but for the sympathy.
Yes,
that it would
exactly
earn her,
right. You know? She doesn't seem like someone who is devoid of seeking pity.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there is that, but especially with the recent round of attacks, like Dumbledore knows who the last victim was, and it's happening again.
Right.
Like, go talk to Myrtle.
Right.
Even if you didn't for the past 49 years, do it now.
Eventually, he will go and find the like fleeting memory of Winky.
Yeah,
just so that he has enough information about where Tom Riddle was while he was working at Borgin and Burks. It's like you're going to that length to find information.
I know. And it's like, and you already suspected Tom Riddle, who you're actively investigating, of killing Myrtle, and you didn't talk to Myrtle.
Right, right.
it's such a miss.
But otherwise, it just ends up being some version of Dumbledore's big plan fodder.
I know. It could also like, just be like, Dumbledore didn't know. He just wanted Harry to do it because Harry has got to train him or something.
It's all part of his quest.
But not, it's just like recklessly irresponsible.
It does feel like that way.
Anyway, let me go ahead and give you guys a quick review.
Hey, let's do it.
All right. This one comes from Rebecca Ravenclaw, who says, best deep dive ever. Hey, brothers, love this podcast and being able to deep dive along with you guys and connect some dots I hadn't noticed before. As a fellow Virginian HP fan, it makes me proud to be able to support y'all while you bring joy to the Potter community. I had a theory after listening to the episode on Chapter 13 and wanted to share. Do you think it's possible Tom Riddle chose a Muggle diary so it would be more familiar to Muggle-born students and they'd pick it up first, since he wanted to use the Basilisk to rid the school of them?
Ooh.
Since Ginny only ended up with because of Lucius, maybe Tom could have originally wanted to frame a Muggle-born student for any attacks that could have happened so they'd seem more dangerous as a whole. Love to hear what you think.
Dang, I don't hate it.
I mean, I hate it either.
It feels very conniving. It feels very like misdirect-y in a way that like is super in keeping with the rest of this book.
Yes.
You know, it's like I said earlier, it's like Chamber of Secrets is all about the red herring. I mean, other than Goblet of Fire, which I would say is the other one that's tremendous in this regard. But no, I like that thought.
I know that like, yeah, oh, like we'll frame a Muggle-born because they'll think it's just a regular diary. Like like pureblood wizards would never pick up this boring diary.
Right, yeah. Right. Yes, especially if it's like notably coming from a well-established muggle locale.
Yeah.
And I mean, the misdirect is so perfect for Voldemort's own plan. It's like, you know, allow the blame to go towards the victims.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, that's a well thought out scenario. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I do too. Cause like otherwise I'm not really sure why he chooses a muggle diary from like Vauxhall Road. Like we don't get a good explanation. Other than like, maybe you just want like a plain diary that has nothing done to it magically already. Like you just want a start from scratch kind of situation.
But it still seems so like, especially how much emphasis is placed on the care that goes into the other Horcruxes that are selected.
Yeah.
That's always the thing that has bothered me about the diary is that it always feels so unimportant.
Yeah.
And like even the killing of like, the other thing is like the kills attached to each Horcrux creation are supposed to be important. And like, you know, Myrtle, it's like, I mean, not for nothing, but she seems like she was not like a well liked person at school. Like she certainly wasn't regarded as like popular. And then Tom was.
Yeah.
So it's not like they would have had like some reason to have like a well established relationship.
Yeah. It's more like because she was muggle born, her death is more like symbolic of his relationship to Salazar Slytherin and his like intent to carry out his goals.
Yeah.
Or his perceived goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't know what he really thought.
I mean, it is like one of those moments where I would love to know what happened on Tom Riddle's face when he realized that the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets is now in a bathroom.
Yeah.
He's like, are you kidding me? Are you a bathroom?
What?
Wow.
No. Yeah. What was it before?
What was it before?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, anyway, I think that's going to bring us. Did you have something to?
I was just going to say, I don't think I've ever realized the connection before that it's the Chamber of Secrets and like a chamber room can be like a name for a bathroom, like a chamber pot. Is that like you obvious? Think
the whole Chamber of Secrets is just Salazar Slytherin's like private bathroom.
I think it's a small little like play on words that's going on. Like the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets is right. In a chamber room.
Right. That's
you
funny.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like I've never considered the association with restrooms and the term chamber being attached to the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets before.
Yeah, that's funny.
So anyway, just a small mind blown moment. Otherwise, your review sentiment, I think, is amazing.
Very good thought. I like it a lot, but I think that's going to bring us to a close here for chapter 15. Make sure you join us next week. It's a big one. Chapter 16, The Chamber of Secrets, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.